You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today's guest is Dr. Torkil Farro. He's a Norwegian general practitioner and also kind of a Renaissance man because he is an athlete, a photographer, and an author of a book entitled The Pulse Cure, Balance Stress, Optimize Health, and Live Longer. The book now available in English translation was a big bestseller in Scandinavia, where this is catching on. So about several decades ago, I mean, until recently, you know, perhaps 5-6 years ago, this book would have been impractical for people because you would have been talking about a phenomenon where people might have to go to a laboratory, take their shirt off, get electrodes applied to their chest, and then with super sophisticated equipment, the size of a footlocker, they would have their heart rate variability analyzed. Now, through the advent of modern technology, we can literally wear devices on our wrist and get feedback. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And it's not only that the devices can track the heart rate so accurately, but it's also that the artificial intelligence has come in and is being able to give advice, you know, individualized and personalized. So it's like a big, big revolution in how we can use and track our heart rate. That is telling us so much about our inner state. And the problem is that our inner state, we don't really have good sense of, because all our senses traditionally have been directed to outward threat, you know, other animals, enemies, contaminated food, you know, and so we have good eyesight, good taste, good hearing, and a good smell and so on. But the sense of our inner state would just have been in the way, would just have been noise, you know, disturbing us from the outside enemies. But now it's our way of life, our stress levels is the big threat to our health and longevity. And this you can see in the heart rate. So but it's such an important part of our physiology that we have this window into through these wearables.
So on certain mornings, I wake up and I feel a little tired, but, you know, I push on and I don't wear any of these devices. I don't do it. I don't know, maybe I'm a Luddite, you know, maybe I'm resistant to the idea of, you know, a device telling me what to do. But on a day where I'm not feeling so hossy-totsy, sometimes I just push through, you know, because I'm determined. And then the result might be that I have kind of a lousy workout. It's counterproductive. What can a device like this tell one about what type of activity levels they should undertake on a given day? Or maybe, you know, that they might be coming down sick, because sometimes I am coming down sick and I don't realize it for a couple of days.
Yeah, so the way I use it, so I'm running for the New York Marathon this November. So I'm training, I'm trying to train as little as I need to, you know, to
be able to run a busy guy
at a decent space.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a busy guy and I can't spend too much energy on recovery after really hard exercise. No. So then I can listen to the training readiness feature from Garmin that will tell me, okay, how much effort can I put on myself today? And also on the Whoop band will have the same. It will have a recovery rate and it will tell me how much should I train myself today, and it will keep track of that. So this is how it could help you, because it may be after a night of alcohol, you know, you may have been eating a late meal the day before, And your body would be struggling to also put the exercise load on your system. It's already struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the body has a certain budget available, certain energy available for all the processes that goes on in the body. But if your body has been working hard because of alcohol the last night, you know, it's just exhausted. You know, there's not so much energy, so to speak, to take care of the hard exercise, but you would also need recovery after. So most people find that, even athletes, that when they start using heart rate variability to track their effort, their intensity, they can train less and they will perform better because they can recover better from their exercise.
Yeah, recovery is a big issue, especially for, you know, older athletes. They require more recovery time, and they can actually push into the red zone with overtraining syndrome. OTS, or overtraining syndrome, is the real deal. People actually sometimes have to take time off from athletics. They're sidelined because they actually develop what is, in effect, a form of dysautonomia. Like, they put the pedal to the metal and they don't go, and then they feel restless when they're not exercising. How can heart rate variability inform athletes about the potential for OTS, overtraining syndrome?
You would see it quite immediately that your heart rate variability over time goes down.
Mm-hmm.
But it will, on the Garmin watch, you will see, you know, on the 4 week, you can see the fluctuation in your heart rate variability, and you would be able to see that the last week or two, it's just going down into the red zone. And then you would know that you're in the OTS department there. So like an early warning signal
that maybe you should have an easy day, do some stretching, and kind of let your body recuperate.
Absolutely. And what's also interesting is that this is for athletes, but even if you are at a poor fitness level, if you have a VO2 max, you know, maybe to 30 or even below, that many people have, they just an easy workout would put you into this kind of overtraining. Because I can see that when I see that the people with this level of fitness, you know, go out to jogging or do a workout, a normal workout, they will get like 4 days of recovery time afterward.
Wow.
And will really struggle. They will get the inflammation in their blood. They will feel sick and, of course, be demotivated and not want to go back to do that. So particularly if you are very unfit and want to start getting fit, that can be a hard process, and particularly if you don't have these trackers to help you.
So it takes a while to condition yourself or to acclimate. There has been some criticism of these devices because to pick up the intervals, there are a couple of techniques. You can use an electrocardiogram, which is the most reliable way because you actually look at the electrical impulses that drive the heartbeats. That's the way it was done traditionally. But with these devices, they work on the basis of optical feedback. And I notice sometimes, you know, that sometimes I'm on my bicycle, and when I start off on my bicycle, usually if my chest strap isn't in the right place, it'll say like my heart rate is like 180 or something like that. And I just barely gotten started. I know it's more like 90 or 100. And then the same thing sometimes with my Apple Watch. I don't have a Garmin, but my Apple Watch will sometimes misread. It'll give me half of what my heart rate is, or it'll give me double what my heart rate is. So there's some question about the reliability of some of these devices. Is there kind of a hierarchy of which devices are best for ascertaining this?
Yeah, I can understand the doubt about the optical version versus the ECG. But luckily for me, the first couple of years that I used heart rate variability was only via the ECG monitors. I didn't even know that it could be existing in the Garmin watches. And then the appliance that I use, the first bit monitor, is the same ECG device that is used for the Garmin. So Garmin has bought the first bit analytics algorithm. And then, of course, I use the first bit monitor in parallel with the Garmin to see if it was accurate enough. And it was, at least for everyday people, maybe for super athletes, you know, that
Tour de France or Olympic athletes or something.
If it's a battle for the centimeters and hundredths of a second, then probably it'd be better with an ECG, but for everyday people, it's more than enough. So I skipped using the ECG device, you know, quite quickly when I saw that I could put the different curves from the two devices on top of each other, and I couldn't see anything different.
Okay.
And they're probably getting better and better, you know, every year, you know, for the next updates and so on.
So when you use an Apple watch, I noticed that you have to use the HRV app, and then it takes the data from your watch and it puts it into the app, and then through artificial intelligence, it interprets it and gives you a score. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And all these different devices will interpret the same numbers, you know, and interpret it in a bit different way.
Yeah.
So that is why I use both the Oura Ring and the Whoop Band, and probably when the Samsung watch and ring comes soon, I'll test that. I've tested the Polar, I've tested Fitbit, and lots of different wearables, and they all have their pros and cons. So you may ask, you know, what is the best one? And that would probably depend on your need.
Yeah.
You know, if you just need a basic understanding of it, maybe the Whoop Band is best. If you prioritize
Let's describe the Whoop Band, because a lot of people know what the Whoop Band is, but it's kind of, I see people walking around and I go, oh my God, you've got a big fat wedding ring on. What the heck is that? It's so bulky. Can you describe that device?
Yeah. The Whoop Band is a bracelet that I have on my right wrist. Mm-hmm. It has no screen on it. So the way to find out the values from the heart rate variability is through your phone.
Okay.
So in the morning, you know, you will check your phone, you'll check your sleep quality, you will get a recovery score, you will get a sleep score, and you will get an estimate of how much strain can you tolerate today.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see as you go through the day, you can see the strain bar, you know, going up, you know, towards maybe a optimal point. Mm-hmm. And the Whoop Band will tell you, okay, now you reached the target of the day. And the Oura Ring is very good for sleep. It's the most accurate for sleep phases and sleep estimation.
Sleep efficiency, not just duration, but sleep efficiency.
That's right. Sleep efficiency, that is coupled, of course, to heart rate variability and the different sleep phases. And this is the device closest to the lab test for sleep accuracy. And of course, both of these devices, it's not so intrusive. You know, you check it in the morning, you check it in the afternoon, and the rest of the day, you don't pretty much care much about it. And the Garmin watch, you know, you can see the stress level in the moment. I can push a button and see the stress levels. And if it's too high, you know, I can start to mitigate it, and I can see within 2 minutes of breath work that it's going down, you know, for example. And you can see a body battery measure go down from the morning and going down throughout the day. And then you can find out that, okay, my body battery is going out very fast. You know, I need to break down a little bit here to relax a little bit. So this you can see, you know, in real time all the time. So that can be more stressful for some people, but for the people who are interested in the most accurate reading and tracking it most accurately, it's the best device for them.
Uh-huh. So, and that brings up, you know, one of the arguments against this, and maybe it's a generational thing, but I think younger people are very enthused about this. Sometimes older people are less enthused about this because it's TMI, too much information. We're bombarded by information and data, and we'd rather rely on our own internal intuitive impressions and not impulsively check a device to tell us if we've gotten a good night's sleep or what we should do during the day. We're resistant to this sort of mechanized, digitalized world.
Yeah. And of course, if you don't have any problem, there's nothing to fix, you know. So if you feel good, you don't have any diseases, you know, you don't have any autoimmune diseases, you know, you feel good, you feel sharp. Well, why check it? How we don't often say it. Most people, you know, are not in that condition. But most people will have some kind of stress in their lives and some kind of trouble and, you know, not feeling refreshed in the morning and feeling too much stress, you know. So most people are in some way in that state. And there are so many people that have used for it and that find out they have a better life with it, you know, than without it. That is how I would advise people to use it. And many people fear that they will, you know, be checking their pulse all the time, but that is not what's happening. You know, if you go back to the car analogy, it's like you're checking your speed, you know, in your car. You know more or less about which speed you have. Sometimes if you see a policeman behind you, you know, you're doing it a bit more accurately. And this is the way that we use this speedometer, our physiological speedometer as well. And I think in the future that everybody would know their own physiological speed. It will be a natural thing to track, particularly as when this speed is too high, it gives you big problems, you know, bigger problems than just your car breaking down, you know, it's you breaking down. Yeah.
I've checked my heart rate variability. I don't, use a device, but I did get some feedback and what it rates me as a little younger than my age, you know, I'm 71 and it rates me more like for the average for a 50-year-old, certainly not, a 25-year-old. But I was happy to see that. What can people do if they have, you know, not such a hotsy-totsy HRV average? What are some of the lifestyle measures that will help to improve their score, which may have a lot of ramifications for their health and well-being and longevity?
Then alcohol would be the first thing to cut. According to Whoop, that it tracks their users, alcohol is by far the worst stressor on your body. So that, I think, would be the first thing to cut. And then I would prioritize sleep, prioritize getting 7 to 8 hours of restorative sleep.
But the regular rhythm, not course, like a random, you know, a shift work kind of sleep.
Yes, that's right. Sleep consistency, according to Whoop, is the most important thing you can do. To go to bed and get up at the more or less the same time. I think it's within a half hour or so. It's a good sleep consistency. And then, of course, in my book, I have several advice on how to improve your sleep, you know, regarding caffeine, light, you know, light in the morning, dim the light in the evening, calm down, to relax. I can see that the best nights, they are the ones where I relax 1 or 2 hours before I go to bed. Earlier, before tracking, I used to think that if I'm really, really tired, you know, and just dive into bed and fall asleep at once, you know, that's good sleep, you know, but you can quickly see that that is terrible sleep.
You know how I'm relaxing these days? I watch an episode or two of Viking Valhalla about the exploits of your ancestors. It's a great series, and it shows what was happening around the year 1000 in your neck of the woods. And I find that very relaxing. And then I can go to bed. You know, there's a little violence and bloodshed.
What's interesting is that people react differently to the same thing. So some people would be stressed by watching TV in the evening.
Yeah.
Other people get relaxed by it. But here you can find out how do you react to it, you know, because normally in research as doctors, we are used to research, you know, putting, for example, 1,000 people, okay, now watch Netflix, you know, for 2 hours before you go to bed, what happens? And then we're used to getting an average of how these 1,000 people respond to it. And that is what we use, you know, in our practice. But here you get the numbers of how you react to a certain stressor or de-stressor. Because I can see clearly that this is very, very individual and personal, how you react to alcohol or food or so many things. So you'll get a personalized answer. And so that was sleep. And then diet seems to be a big stressor.
Do you actually see variations on your Garmin or on your device With say, you know, go to a wedding, you know, you have a lot of, you know, sugary food, dessert. Does it actually impact HRV?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that was one of my biggest surprises in the start, you know, because I thought I had only heard about the autonomic nervous system as fight, fight, or freeze. And mm-hmm. I've never been a fighter and I've never been kind of stressed or anxious. So I would just assume that I would be in the parasympathetic mode all the time.
Right.
So once I started tracking, I saw that is really not.
So there are other forms. Forms of stress. There are, in addition to psychological stress or extrinsic stress, there's the stress of diet, the stress of sleep, the stress of excess urban noise, any number of things.
Yeah, and it's like an iceberg that most of the stressors, it seems, are underneath the surface. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know it until you track it. And one of my first surprises, I was working, as a doctor, and of course, it's the same work before and after lunch. But in this lunch, you know, one of the colleagues was leaving and they have a big cake, you know, and had two large, really large pieces of cake instead of the usual salad. And then I was in this really high stress state for hours afterward. Mm-hmm. That was the first time I just realized that, wow, food can stress me.
Wow.
Where did that come from? You know, how can that be? You know, why does my heart rate go up 20 beats, you know, from 60 to 80?
Right.
Just because I had two cakes instead of a salad.
And that's a teachable moment when you have a device that actually gives you feedback, because your own subjective state may be, you know, I don't feel so good after this, but it's unclear what's happening to your body.
Yeah. And then a lot of people find out that when they are watching Netflix with a bag of crisps, then they're in the stress state. You know, mm-hmm. if they eat peanuts or popcorn instead, you know, they're in the relaxed state. So diet, you know, of course, and diet is one of the major sources of inflammation and disease, you know, and then we can also see it on the monitors. I know that if I'm in the stress state, I just order Caesar salad, you know, but then I know that this is not going to stress me. Because so many people also find out that they have a food intolerance. If you have a food intolerance, your heart rate variability will show it.
This is very interesting, because it may be not known to you because this is before your time, but in the 1960s, there was actually an allergist. His name was Dr. Coca, and he proposed the Coca pulse test. And it was done, you know, kind of crudely, you know, where you challenge yourself with different foods. And he would do this in his office. He would give people a challenge with foods, and he would see if their pulse rate changed. Instead of seeing if they had like an allergic wheal from an injection, this is how he determined whether people had a food intolerance. And it wasn't necessarily IgE mediated. It wasn't like a classic food allergy. It was a form of food intolerance. And those were the foods that he told people to avoid. And it was very individual. It was, you know, it could be wheat, eggs. It could be, you know, any different foods, different strokes for different folks.
Absolutely. And so many people, so when people contact me and they say, I've done everything in the book and I still have a high stress level, then I tell them, okay, then the chances are so high that you have a food intolerance that you should invest those $200 or so to take the test. And when they come back with a test, you can see that they have food intolerance to maybe 10 different things. There would be no chance at all to be able to do this detective work, you know, by taking some, eliminating some and putting something in. But anyway, your heart rate will react to food that you can't tolerate, either if it's ultra-processed food or specific food intolerant foods.
I'd certainly sugar is
a shock to me. Yeah. Sugar, particularly sugar in ultra-processed food. And that seems to be even worse than the sugar just in itself. And so people eating chocolate, people see that, okay, if I eat chocolate late in the evening, I will be stressed for hours, you know, maybe 3 or 4 hours afterwards.
And
that is also the important thing about the wearable, that it motivates you to do the hard choices. So when I see the effect of doing a cold shower, or swimming in the cold water, or doing fasting, or doing breathing exercises, when I see it, it's so much easier to motivate me to do that. And the opposite way, of course, when I see the effect of alcohol and chocolate and sweet and candy and all the good stuff that I used to like, you know, then it's easier to refrain from it and just eat it at moderate levels, because I don't think it's good to be some kind of extremist either. You know, you need to find a balance. You need to have good enough health, you know, to be able to live your life without being restrained by your physiology and disease. You know? And because that is so sad to see as a doctor, because if you don't take care of your body and it starts betraying you after you are 50, and then when you are 60 and 70, almost everything you do is related to disease. You know, it's like a full-time job, you know, having contracted 5 or 6 lifestyle-related diseases. It's like having a full-time job.
Indeed. So is it your hope that HRV and checking pulse rate will become an obligatory part of medicine? You know, because right now it is much ignored. This is more of a self-care revolution. It's not something that's been embraced by the medical establishment. But do you foresee that at a future date it become as intrinsic a part of a physical exam as checking blood pressure, checking blood sugar, checking heart rate, you know, just pulse, but actually incorporating this technology to assess people's health?
Yeah, I'm sure. And they will keep control themselves. So they would more rarely be in touch with their doctors, you know, the ones who are able to control it better. And also, of course, doctors can use it. It is so useful for doctors that they can see their patient's stress levels. They can see, because as a doctor, if you ask the patient, you know, how have you been the last 3 months? You know, how have you been doing? You know, you never get a useful answer.
Yeah.
But when you see these readings, you know, you will get an answer.
It's very objective. It's tangible. It's not like a subjective impression, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's so useful. And so many, many different things like B12 deficiency, vitamin D deficiency, these kind of things can be shown, iron deficiency. And you can see, for example, after a certain surgery, when are you back into your normal state?
Yeah.
Again, like after COVID, you know, how long after COVID? Particularly, I would say the specialist that should be particularly about this is gynecologists and obstetricians.
Huh.
Because there's so much connected to heart rate variability, like from fertility, of PMS and PMDD, you know, the premenstrual syndrome and premenstrual dysphoric disorder is coupled to it. And once you start to reduce your stress, you can flatten this curve, you know, you can see the curve from PMS and PMDD on the heart rate variability as a sign of the physiological load from that week before menstruation. And also endometriosis and polycystic ovary syndrome is also coupled to it. And of course, the many different types of cancers will also be detected in heart rate variability. So both the risk of cancer is coupled to heart rate variability. If you get cancer, the prognosis is coupled to heart rate variability.
Wow.
And the risk of relapse also is coupled to heart rate variability, because heart rate variability is a sign of the load on your body, on your physiology.
Mm-hmm.
What
is sometimes referred to as allostatic load, just the overall burden internally and externally on your system. Wow. Well, this is very profound and thought-provoking, and I think it's going to inspire some of our listeners to investigate heart rate variability through the plethora of new avenues available via devices and via various types of analysis. The book is a wonderful guide and introduction to this subject. It's very accessible. You explain beautifully how this works. It's been a runaway bestseller in Scandinavia, where I guess people are very health conscious. And now it's available in English translation. It's The Pulse Cure: Balance Stress, Optimize Health, and Live Longer. And I want to thank you, Dr. Torkel Farrow, for joining us and interrupting your voyage to the midnight sun in Scandinavia during your summer vacation. And I hope that you enjoy yourself and experience a lot of the beauty and solitude of Norway, your home country.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much, Ronald, for having me on your podcast. And I would also say that the book is also an audiobook. Many people prefer to listen, you know, particularly people who listen to podcasts prefer to be to listen to the book. So it's also an audiobook.
That's great. I really appreciate it. So once again, The Pulse Cure. Thank you, Dr. Farrow, for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news, and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.